So we want to get back to, and that's the first guest. We reached out, somebody we've kind of studied what everything he said online and other things. It's Mike Yeadon, joins us from England. He was on the other day. Mike, just to start off with, because we always like to say, tell people, hey, if it's about the election fraud, we want to make sure it's in a court case or make sure it's something sanctioned by a state legislature. It's just not people on YouTube or people throwing out concepts and ideas. This actually has a place to adjudicate it where you have to show evidence. I want to make sure, you worked at Pfizer, but I want you to walk through briefly your academic background, your work at Pfizer, and then afterwards you started your own company, I think sold it for $350 million, a biotech company. Walk through your bona fides in this area, sir.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you very much, Steve, for having me back again. So, yes, Dr. Mike Yeadon, my first degree is a joint honours biochemistry and toxicology. And I got not just the first class honours, I got the highest first class the university ever awarded. I followed that by a three-year research-based PhD. That was respiratory pharmacology. It was partly funded, actually, by the military. After that PhD, I worked for 7 years at the Wellcome Research Labs until they merged with Glaxo, which went on to become GSK. And at that time, I went to Pfizer in the UK, and I was there 17 years. I finished as their vice president and chief scientist of allergy and respiratory research. So I was responsible for the worldwide research and development up to clinical proof of concept across the whole company. And then after that, I left them 10 years ago on very good terms, by the way. I loved working with Pfizer. For the last 10 years, five of those years, I started, raised all the money for and led as CEO a biotech called Ziarko. We acquired a compound from my former portfolio at Pfizer that was surplus. We converted it into a dermatology asset and we sold it to Novartis, the world's biggest drug company, for roughly $350 million. At least that's the rumored sum. I'm not allowed to tell you the actual sum, but it was pretty good. And then along in that 10 years, I've consulted to 30 startup biotech companies, two of which are now public, Apellis Pharmaceuticals and Pulmatrix.
So if I had, as an investment banker, my Goldman Sachs had, if we had to reach out to a consultant on an M&A project, you would consider yourself to be among the top practitioners in the world, not just theoreticians in universities, but people that actually go to work for these big pharmaceutical companies and actually have to take theoretical science and use applied research to actually get products in the field, correct? That is, I would take it, your specialty?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. So we originated programs in-house, but I also led for 10 years the in-licensing team at Pfizer. So we reviewed 100 companies in that 10 years and we did 3 deals.
Perfect. This is that. Okay. My point. This is a guy that's not some guy up on YouTube talking smack. This is one of the top professionals in the world from the heart of the industry. This is what we call a subject matter expert with credentials that cannot be questioned. Because it's just, they're so on every level, whether it's the academic background, the years at the big corporations, grinding it out, going out as an entrepreneur, really doing a lot what he did in the lab, creating a great company, selling, and everyone, whether it's Glaxo or Wellcome or Novartis or Pfizer, this is the creme de la creme. You're playing at the highest level. Okay? So, yeah. Dr. Mike Yeadon, I then want to go through, make your case about your problem as a professional about this whole vaccine problem, how it originated, where we stand, and where you think it's headed, sir.
Yeah, certainly. I'll do that quickly. So I'm very pro vaccines. I'm particularly pro safe medicines. And my biggest beef with the vaccines includes serious concerns about safety. But I've just got 3 points to make about the vaccines. In absolute honesty, I don't think they're even necessary. Why are they not necessary? Well, that's because there are at least 4 or 5 safe and effective medicines, and their presence has been suppressed and hidden from the public. So they're not really necessary. The next is, it's not even clear if they're effective enough. The trials have been done in a really strange way where they used, say, PCR positivity as the endpoint with one minor symptom. So most people think if a vaccine works, it saves you from serious disease or death, and those things were not measured in the trial. So I'm not saying they don't work. I'm saying the data is not clear. And then finally, they have not been sufficiently tested. They have been approved for emergency use, fraudulently in my view, because They shouldn't do it if there are safe and effective medicines, and there are. They've just been hidden. So it's an emergency use only, and that means they've been plucked from the middle of late stage development. They've still got about 1.5 years of clinical phase to run, and they normally collect safety information as well as efficacy information. We don't have that data because we're already out inoculating a billion people. But along the way, we've gathered some safety concerns, Steve.
Okay. Hang on a second, Dr. Yeah, I want to go back to something. Because you come from the industry and you've actually made money on things that relate to vaccines. You say you're pro-vaccine, right? You're not an anti-vaxxer crusader.
Absolutely.
You're not even vaccine hesitant if it's proper. But I want to go back to your first point, because this is where people say, hey, I see on TV and I see all these prominent scientists and they work with all these big companies and they seem like solid citizens. And in the managerial expert world we live in, they're presented by experts by NBC and CNN and Time Warner and the New York Times, all the expert after expert. I want to go back to your first point. You said it was suppressed. What are the two or three things you think work? Why do you think they work? And why were they suppressed?
Okay, so hydroxychloroquine is a very common one, and it reduces viral replication. So when it's given at the early stages of infection, it definitely reduces the viral load in a person, makes it less likely they will progress. Sometimes they add zinc as well, because the hydroxychloroquine works by letting zinc into cells. Another major one is ivermectin, which is an off-patent antiparasitic. It also happens to have antiviral effects as well. Then the last two, I guess, would be azithromycin, which is an off-patent antimicrobial, but it also has anti-inflammatory properties, which we knew about. And then finally, inhaled steroids like budesonide that are commonly used in asthma. If you have those four drugs, Dr. Peter McCullen believes that almost no one who isn't right at the end of life needs to die of this virus. And why have they been suppressed? Steve, I don't know, but I think it's part of a fraud. I was on last week and I told you that all the main narrative points about the virus are, so we say, adjacent to the truth, lies, frankly, designed to make people fearful. And I think suppressing the drugs, the treatments, has had two benefits for whoever is doing this. One is it makes people willing to take the vaccine, and it makes vaccines available much earlier than they otherwise would and should have been. So that's probably the motivation.
Let me add, what, because look, some of our stuff was taken down back in the spring, and some, we would have some of the experts on here about hydroxy, ivermectin, the very things you're talking about, not the steroids, but the first three, you know, we'd be taking down our Twitter account. For how did the social media companies, what was their rationale, and what expert opinions did you ever hear of people that could back up everything that this was all voodoo, witchcraft, dangerous?
Yeah, I wasn't very close to this while it was going on. I was focusing last year on PCR testing, but I had a very good friend, a physician, Dr. Tess Laurie in the UK, and she was reporting that they were writing up reviews of, you know, collected clinical information from around the world, and it was clear in her case that ivermectin was working really well, and they were literally suppressing the manuscripts at journal level. So I'm talking about medical journals that you would think of as being beyond reproach. Someone was leaning on them and refusing to publish papers that were written to at least the same quality as everything else they were publishing. So I'm afraid it was just, they were tortured.
But Dr. Yeadon, we always talk, science goes forward today with peer-reviewed journals. That's kind of the high priesthood. It's kind of the high priesthood of scientific knowledge. How could the high priesthood be corrupted? Because essentially what you're saying is, at even at that level, that there was suppression from outside. What outside forces do you believe? We got about 30 seconds. What outside forces do you think got into the temple?
I think journals have been provided with a lot of money, sometimes actually acquired by interests that are now being manifest. And almost all scientists everywhere outside of industry, if they're in universities, they have to beg, steal for, and borrow for their grants. So all the major granting bodies are also, I think, part of the pressurizing of this system. Scientific review only works when you release the pressure, and there's a lot of pressure on these people. We rejoice when there's no more. Let's take down the CCP.
They have all our war room. And Pandemic with Stephen K. Bannon.
The epidemic is a demon, and we cannot let this demon hide.
War Room Pandemic. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Remember one thing for this audience, we're going to get to about Jake Corman in Pennsylvania. We're going to talk about what's going on in this infrastructure bill. You're the vanguard. You're this audience. The reason people come to this show, this audience is so powerful on your response. And the response I've seen to certain things is just blow you away if you really knew the numbers. So we need you to put your shoulder to the wheel. The rest of the show is going to be a lot of very disturbing, I think, evidence about what's really going on. I want to go back to Dr. Malone in California. You've had a technical problem. I want to apologize to the audience, but Denver, our great team there has been able to work it out. Dr. Malone, Raheem's talking about if you see where France is going, where England, the United States, you may even get in a situation with these vaccines. And look, we're not trying to be alarmist, right? We're trying to give evidence, data. We believe in science. We believe in evidence. We believe in data. That's why we have people like you on. Dr. Homa is going to join us from Texas in a little while. Talk to us. Do you think we're going to get into a situation, sir, that you actually, about vaccinations, could have family separation?
So I've been called to, as an expert witness, to testify in a court in Boston of a child who has been removed from their parents' custody, a 14-year-old, and the court is, the legal system is insisting on vaccinating this 14-year-old. The mother is objecting, and she's a very senior biotech executive. She's highly informed. She's made a decision not to vaccinate her child based on the data, and the courts have removed custody and are trying to force the child to accept vaccination. They're so worked up, the parents, and they have the capital, they're going to fly me up to Boston potentially to testify in court.
Dr. Mutt, this is what I don't understand. You've dedicated your life. I mean, not only are you not an anti-vaxxer, you have dedicated your life to vaccines, right? We played the Joy Reid clip at the beginning. This thing now has gotten to be, they don't put forth any evidence. They don't put forth it, just assertions, and demands. As a scientist and someone that spent their life doing this, where are we right now as a country in this debate, sir?
So we really have been split, and there is, as you heard in the Joy Reid clip, there's an underlying assumption that the 50% of the country that is not accepting vaccine is doing so based on some political rationale. The studies are out that these people that are vaccine hesitant are actually highly informed. They understand the facts in many cases. This is not, this falls into the deplorables stereotype. But in fact, what you have is people that are actually being data-based in their decision-making for the large part. They're often highly educated, highly informed, and they are aware of the issues. And what we're having is this emotional appeal. Recognize what she just did. They just did in that clip. They're appealing. They're essentially saying you're not being a patriot if you don't accept vaccine. That's the subtext here. But in fact, if you're wary or hesitant about taking vaccine, particularly for your children, that is a rational data-based decision. And by the way, these are not licensed products. It's your right to have that decision. And they seem to be so frustrated, they're doubling down on their authoritarianism in terms of the attempts to force. I mean, taking kids away from their parents, that's not a theoretical thing. It's happening. There's the belief that they're okay with forcing people to do these things, but the evidence doesn't support this universal vaccination strategy.
How did a 14-year-old, how did the state come in and say, actually, a 14-year-old has to be vaccinated if their parents don't want it and they believe in informed consent and the woman's got expertise in biotechnology, is an expert? How does that actually work?
I have no idea. This is all I know about the case, is I don't know the underlying context. Apparently, the 14-year-old believes they want vaccination, and they're in conflict with their parents. You got to understand that, for instance, in Virginia and in many areas in the country, the federal government is providing capital for these incentive programs, like every child that gets vaccinated is going to get a $50 gift card, or they get entered into a big lottery. This is what's going on right now. It is outright coercion. It's no longer ice cream cones to get the jab without your parents' approval, like was going on in Canada, but it's now financial incentives to children to get the jab, and they have enormous peer pressure. You know how a 14-year-old is subjected to peer pressure.
Yeah, and that's how they're using the influencers. Our staff has put together something very disturbing, our show on Monday, about these young influencers, the young woman with the platform shoes in the White House. These influencers are just out there to make sure the kids, you're going to split the families. I want to play, this is very disturbing. Dr. Malone has found it. It's from a think tank. It's Mr. Fauci. Can we play the clip? And I want to have Dr. Malone tell us. We've had a major inflection point that Dr. Malone has picked up. Let's play the Fauci clip.
We're looking at an orally administered, maybe 7 to 10 days, given to person who is early on in the course of their infection before you get to the cascade of events that lead to the aberrant activation inflammatory response that kills people. Because we know now from a lot of experience with the care of these individuals that if you can keep that virus from going to the upper airway to going down into the lung and other organ systems, you can change what could be a devastating disease and make it an upper airway common cold type approach, which is really what we need to do. We only need to knock out that virus for about 7 to 10 days rather than lifelong what we have to do with HIV.
What are you telling people is the optimal profile?
Okay. The optimal profile, we're comfortable with this because we've developed product profiles for so many other drugs, including with HIV. So first of all, I want a pill that blocks a specific viral function. I want to give it once a day, if possible. I want it to be low in toxicity. And I want it to have very minimal drug-drug interactions. So orally administered, single pill, given for 7 to 10 days, little drug-drug interaction, and low toxicity. Give me that, and I'll be really happy.
Okay, Dr. Malone, you found this for us because you're on this like a hawk. Nobody's really reported this. You said that this is a major inflection point. Walk us through what we just saw and heard, and why is it an inflection point, sir?
So last week with Peter Navarro and yourself, we went through the huge bombshell of the CDC report and what that means. And we predicted that this new information, that the vaccines aren't protecting against infection very well. They are... if anything, they appear to be perhaps enhancing viral replication. They're certainly not inhibiting it in people that are infected, that the Delta variant can't be stopped from spreading across the United States using these leaky vaccines. And with Peter, we rolled out both on your program and then in an op-ed in the Washington Times, an alternative strategy that is solid, makes a lot of sense, and grounded in some of the top virology and vaccinology thinkers, epidemiology thinkers across the world, like Gert van den Bosch. So we predicted that there was going to be a pivot, and lo and behold, this impromptu think tank presentation in which Tony Fauci is clearly reading off of notes all the way through. You caught that in his statements about, well, we don't really have a target product profile, but we're moving off of the ones that we've developed previously. I can tell you, we've been working off target product profiles with the DoD team for well over a year now. We have detailed product profiles for agents. Now, if you listen to what he said, it sounds an awful lot like ivermectin, frankly, with the exception that Tony continues to be dug in on the idea that we have to have an antiviral approach. That's been his position from the get-go. Furthermore, further on in this interview, he emphasizes only the drugs in development by the large pharmaceutical companies, including Merck and Pfizer. Furthermore, he talks about a single pill. He seems to be recapitulating the mistakes that he made with HIV of coming out with a single drug therapy He seems to be going back to his AIDS playbook, which, by the way, was a failure on the part of the NIAID. It was independent work from David Ho that finally got us to the multi-drug strategy. If we come out with antiviral single drugs, which, by the way, historically, like Tamiflu, have been horrible solutions for respiratory viruses. They don't work because you can't get them on board fast enough. And just think through the logistics of what you have to do to get there. Okay, you can't get the drugs on board fast enough to shut down the virus. And furthermore, if we go to large-scale deployment of single-agent antivirals that are sequence-specific, what we're going to get is just the same as happened with AIDS. Okay, what he is still dug in on is the idea that we have to treat the virus, not the anti-inflammatory response. Now, there's new data out over this last week from Israel from a double-blind randomized clinical trial that, in fact, ivermectin is showing benefit. And what surprised me in a positive way is that it's showing antiviral activity. I did not anticipate that. So we're now in a position where we've got multiple repurposed drugs that have activity, including one that appears to have antiviral activity, and other agents that are quite potent as anti-inflammatories. Tony completely neglects the fact that you can treat the inflammatory response and get to his objective of this becoming more like the common cold using the agents that we already have. And we went over those last Saturday with Peter Navarro. So in sum, we predicted there was going to be a great pivot. The Washington Post predicted there was going to be a great pivot. They were going to have to do it in public. And Tony then came out with this hastily developed presentation in which he's reading off of notes that shows exactly the great pivot, except he's doubling down on antivirals and agents that are currently in development. They're in early stage clinical trials from large pharmaceuticals with patented products. Again, they're dug in on supporting big pharma. I don't know how else to explain it.
How, just quickly, going to break, I'm going to bring you back and get into some of the technical details of target product profile, et cetera. But why is it Fauci? Is Collins, there's got to be some other voices of reason. There has to be other Dr. Malones in the system that are sitting there going, this is sheer madness. We're essentially replicating the failure we had for a decade or longer than a decade on AIDS and HIV. Dr. Malone.
So I had a phone call out of the blue from a colleague that I've known for many, many years, who's what's called a GS-15, a senior GS-15. He's essentially a brigadier general on the civilian side in the Department of Defense. And we discussed the war room presentation with him last Saturday, and we discussed the current situation here. His impression, and I concur, is that Tony has no strategy. Right now, we are in free fall. The decision makers in the government right now have been, their core assumptions about what they're going forward with, the whole thinking has been flipped. They don't know what to do, and they're winging it. And somehow, we got to get to the point where the government thinks this through and comes up with a solid strategy.
Dr. Malone, hang on. We're going to talk about that strategy when we return in the war room.
War Room. Pandemic with Stephen K. Bannon.
The epidemic is a demon, and we cannot let this demon hide.
War Room. Pandemic. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
If you like what you're hearing, you like what you're seeing, go to MyPillow.com, promo code War Room, support the War Room. I don't have time. The sales all over the place. You got the square when you get there. Check it out. Action, action, action. Dr. Malone, here's the problem. You're saying that now they're panicking and they're kind of, you know, Fauci's doing these pivots, but your quote, not mine, they're in free fall. At the same time, we saw from Joy Reid and David Jolly, they're saying we're getting tired. We have no more compassion for people that, because you see the anger on MSNBC in every episode. We don't have any more compassion for the unvaccinated. They're causing this. It's a pandemic among the unvaccinated. They're getting more and more authoritarian on on passports, then forced vaccinations. Dr. Malone, your thoughts?
So it's fascinating to watch. It reveals the underlying psychology of these people, that when they're frustrated, they go straight to authoritarianism. They're making demands that aren't grounded in data. It's clearly not the unvaccinated that are driving the development of these resistance mutants. And we covered all this last Saturday, and then subsequently in that op-ed with Peter in the Washington Times that's getting so much attention. So we need to keep forcing this. I think we may have an opportunity to shift the dialogue. The fact that I got this call and we had that discussion shows that there are senior people, at least within the Department of Defense, that are open to listening to alternative strategies in the absence of what they see as any currently effective or rational strategy.
But you have voices of reason, there's no doubt, and there's many in the government right now, we know that. But they're so dug in and gone down this path, how do they reverse it? And does your GS-15, your Brigadier General, does he believe we're heading towards basically mandatory forced vaccinations, Dr. Malone?
Yes, clearly we are, and that's being the federal government doesn't have the right to do that except to their own employees, so military personnel for sure, government employees for sure. And then what they seem to be doing, it's fascinating, is they're pushing down through the academic medical centers and other structures that they do have financial hooks into and forcing them to implement these. I'm hearing from physicians that are being attacked if they have alternative voices in their universities, like at Baylor, by large groups of outside lawyers, the funding of which is unclear. But they're not the standard university lawyers. There seems to be legal strike teams being deployed against high-profile individuals that have been speaking counter-narratives, that have been addressing the science as opposed to this shared narrative that is being reinforced by mainstream media.
Dr. Malone, as we wrap up your segment, what would be your be? The Washington Times editorial is on fire. We got it back up in all the live chat rooms. We're going to push it out again. If you had Biden and Fauci in the room together this morning, you had 2 or 3 minutes to walk them through, hey, guys, here's exactly what we need to do for our nation, right, and for our citizens. What would you tell them?
So we laid this out really clearly. Here's the key bullet points. We did it last Saturday and then in the editorial. The key bullet points are it's okay, it's appropriate to continue to vaccinate the high-risk individuals, and they're starting to deploy. You know, we're going to have to revaccinate them every 6 months now. That's because the vaccines are leaky and they have poor durability. We need to rapidly allow and start deploying these drug combinations, repurposed drug combinations that are already licensed and are largely anti-inflammatories, but the ivermectin data is coming in stronger and stronger. There's no downside to dosing ivermectin at 200 micrograms per kilogram once daily, and it does seem to have efficacy. So we need to go ahead and make those available, and we absolutely, the CDC has got to get their act together and enable testing, widespread testing. It doesn't have to be mandatory testing, but enable physicians' offices and ideally individuals to get rapid tests so that they know that they're actually infected by this virus as opposed to a rhinovirus or something else, so that they can quickly avail themselves of these early agents that are exactly what Tony is saying that he needs to have, but are currently on the market in generic. Unfortunately, the big pharma can't make money on them, but that shouldn't stop us from saving lives.
Real quickly, the key to the shift that you're saying is anti-inflammatory and not treat the virus. In about a minute and a half, why is that important for our audience to understand and for Biden to understand?
This is a disease. The virus is necessary but not sufficient to develop the disease. The disease is your response to the virus. We have a rich library of anti-inflammatory drugs. We use them for a variety of things. And those anti-inflammatories largely provide a fantastic toolkit to allow physicians to rationally manage the hyperinflammatory response that occurs. In addition, we have anticoagulants, apixaban and others, that are very effective, and a lot of this disease is driven by the coagulation problems. So we have stuff in our kit. We just have to stop, you know, going back to the past. We have to have antivirals like we had with HIV. It's a very different disease. Here, what we need to do is treat your hyperinflammatory response to the virus, because that's what kills you. That's what puts you in the hospital. That's what damages your lungs. That's what damages your heart. It's not the primary viral infection. It's the inflammatory response to it.
Dr. Ballone, we got to bounce. I know you got to go. What's your Twitter feed, Getter, or whatever else you're on? People need to follow you. This is massively important information. How do people get to you, sir?
So it's always the same, at RW Malone MD. The Twitter is now over 200,000. I got deleted arbitrarily again off of LinkedIn and sent an email to a vice president, and they flipped the switch back on. I don't know what's going on there. We basically got lower level technicians in all of these platforms making decisions.
Yeah.
Are not grounded in science. They just, if you're saying something that is different from the CDC or the WHO, off with their heads.
Yeah. You're coming on the war room. That's the problem. Dr. Malone, have a good weekend. You're a patriot and a hero. See you back early next week. Dr. Robert Malone. Short break. Stay tuned. The action is about to ramp up in the war room.